Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point. Cambridge Analytica CEO Alexander Nix has been suspended after reports the political data firm harvested over 50 million Facebook users' data. In secretly recorded conversations, Nix bragged that the company was instrumental to President Trump's victory. Facebook is facing its own firestorm. The Federal Trade Commission has opened an investigation. Politicians are calling for CEO Mark Zuckerberg to testify, and all are asking whether the social media giant mishandled users' personal data. This hour, On Point, regulating Facebook. You can join us on air or online. Is it time to rein in, regulate social media platforms? Are you worried about your online privacy? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in studio is Ben Tarnoff, technology and politics columnist at the London-based Guardian. He is also the founding editor of Logic, a magazine about technology. Ben, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me.
So give us the latest. We know that Cambridge Analytica's CEO is out. Facebook execs are facing the heat on Capitol Hill. Catch us up on what's going on.
So there are a lot of questions about what Cambridge Analytica did with the data that they improperly acquired from about 50 million Facebook profiles. We know that they purchased it from a Cambridge University academic named Alexander Kogan, who himself collected it by having 270,000 users take a personality quiz, which was an app on Facebook. But that personality quiz harvested information not only from those users, but from all of their friends as well, without those people's consent or knowledge. So understandably, politicians and regulators in both the United States and the United Kingdom have a lot of questions about this.
And you're talking about these quizzes. I mean, those of us who use Facebook, we've taken quizzes, you know, what kind of superhero are you and such. Is this a widespread use of this type of data mining?
Well, this was a feature that Facebook offered developers who build apps on its platform from about 2010 to when they shut it down from 2014 to 2015. And this feature essentially allowed third-party applications to acquire vast amounts of information not only from the user that installed that application, but from their friends as well. So it was a way for essentially third parties to build their own mini Facebooks, because they could acquire millions and millions of people's information.
So ex-Facebook exec Sandy Perikilis said that this kind of data harvesting was routine. How widespread a practice is this?
Well, I think we can assume that this is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, this API feature in particular gave such unrestricted access to friends' information, we can assume that many, many developers took advantage of this. But we have to keep in mind, even though this particular feature has been shut down, this is the fundamental business model of Facebook. So even if it's not Cambridge Analytica harvesting all this information, Facebook harvests all this information about its 2 billion users, and that should really concern people.
All right, here's a clip from the secretly recorded conversation between undercover Channel 4 news reporters and Cambridge Analytica's chief data officer, Alex Taylor, and the managing director, Mark Turnbull, published this week. The reporters posed as potential clients interested in swaying the Sri Lankan elections.
If you're collecting data on people and you're profiling them, that gives you more insight that you can use to know how to segment the population, to give them messaging about issues that they care about and language and imagery that they're likely to engage with. Mm. And we use that in America and we use that in Africa. That's right. What we do as a company.
Yeah. We've done it in Mexico, we've done it in Malaysia, and now we're moving into Brazil.
China. Brazil is big.
Australia, China.
But China also.
Just starting in China, not in politics.
So, Ben, they're boasting about using this information to try to affect elections across the globe.
Absolutely. So this is important to keep in mind, which is that Cambridge Analytica itself is a legal fiction. The real organization here is SCL Group. SCL Group has run PSYOPs campaigns all over the world, in Africa, in Latin America, in the Middle East, and they've done so on behalf of militaries, on behalf of governments, and in particular, the U.S. and the U.K. government as well. The State Department in particular has been a customer of SCL Group services. So this is quite widespread.
So Facebook is saying, look, we didn't know this was happening. We're as much of a victim here as the users who were involved in that. Is that true, or does Facebook bear a big chunk of the blame here?
I would say Facebook bears almost all of the blame. They put out a statement recently saying that they are completely outraged and that they're working hard to fix the situation. But anyone within Facebook knows that this is how they make money. Right? Facebook makes its money from advertising, and in particular targeted advertising. They can't sell targeted advertising without surveillance. So surveillance is the basis of how Facebook makes money.
Okay. I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Joining me now in studio is Emily Dreyfus, former senior staff writer at Wired, covering technology and national affairs. She is now doing the Nieman Journalism Fellowship at Harvard. Emily, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Kim.
So we're talking about big data. Big data is something people have been concerned about for a long time. How is that data stored, collected? How is it used? What about this, if anything, is different?
You know, I think that we've been waiting to see if there would be a tipping point when the opacity of big data and the danger of the surveillance mechanism of technology that Ben was just referencing would actually burst into people's consciousness and make people really aware and concerned about how their footprint and interaction with the so-called free internet is actually affecting their lives. I think what is interesting about this point is perhaps people finally understand how gross this is and how the business model that underpins the social web really does depend on us giving up a lot of ourselves and giving our agency away to these technology companies. So I do think this is different. I think it's also just compounded. Facebook has been hit with PR scandals sort of like this for about a year now, maybe two. And I think that this is finally maybe going to make a difference.
And so I know the issue of regulation has come up, and lawmakers have been trying to figure out what, if anything, they can do to regulate this. In the UK, there is regulation. Tell us a little bit about what they're doing there, and could that work in America?
So the European Union has a law that will be passing, will be implemented soon in May, called GDPR. And this law is huge and immense. Ben and I were just talking about how complicated it is. But essentially what it will do is try to give users of the internet back some rights. And the main rights are that they have to give technology companies their consent before their data can be used. And they have the right to know how that information is being used. So when this law is enacted in May, companies like Facebook, Google, Slack, all the big technology companies that we all use every single day as part of our lives will have to let us know what they are collecting of ours. They'll have to give us the chance to opt out rather than right now we are on all these platforms. We are opted in by default. And what we can do is go into the settings on Facebook somewhere and check a box that says, actually, I don't want you to send my data to third parties. But people don't know to do that because they don't know it's there. What this law will say is, wait, the default needs to be that you're not sending that information, and people can choose with conscious consent to opt in. This is going to be huge. It's going to change the way that technology companies are dealing with this data in Europe, but it's going to have really big cascading impacts for us even here in America, because as these companies figure out how to comply with the law, they're going to have to make changes that will affect us even here.
Okay. Sonia is calling from Decatur, Illinois. Hi, Sonia.
Hello, Kim. How are you?
I'm good. You're on point.
Okay. The thing that I want to say, you can't totally blame Facebook for everything. There is not one app that is on that you can put on your phone or anything else that doesn't tell you that it needs connection to your personal data. So there is a lot of apps that I will not use because they need access to my contacts and my pictures. And why in the world do they need that just for me to have an app on my phone?
Yes, Sonia is making a point I think a lot of our listeners have. What do you think, Ben?
Well, I think it's an important point, which is that Facebook does provide a useful service. Many people enjoy being on Facebook. I know I do. I mean, I can see my friends' baby photos and stay in touch with relatives and so on. I think Facebook, in a sense, is inescapable, right? And I think that's actually a really important point, is that the solution to this is not to quit Facebook. It's not to delete Facebook. Facebook has become one of the digital infrastructures that, for better or worse, and often recently worse, rule our lives. So the question, I think, is less about how do we take an off-ramp from Facebook, how do we exit Facebook, and more about how do we reform it and regulate it so that we can get the benefits of a social media platform, which we all enjoy, while we're also having a democratic conversation about what the trade-offs are. I'm not sure necessarily that we have to be absolutists on all of these privacy questions. All I'm suggesting is that as a society, we have a democratic conversation and make democratic decisions about what those trade-offs are.
And Emily, I mean, we know a little bit about these trade-offs when we agree to go on these social media platforms. Is there a responsibility on the part of the user?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we should be informed. And, you know, your caller, Sonia, is right that most of these apps that you can install on your phone or through Facebook will give you some sort of boilerplate about how they're going to need access. The question is whether or not it's too much of a burden to put on people to know how that information is going to be used or misused in the future. And the truth is, no one can really know because we're just learning how it's being abused right now.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're discussing Facebook's data breach and the social network's responsibility to its users. You can join the conversation. Do you believe the boasting from Cambridge Analytica's now suspended CEO that the company helped elect Donald Trump? If given the chance, what would you ask Mark Zuckerberg? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm speaking with Ben Tarnoff, columnist at The Guardian, covering technology and politics, and Emily Dreyfus, former writer at Wired, covering technology and national affairs. She's now doing a fellowship at Harvard. So, Ben, Cambridge Analytica, this was a company with close ties to Trump campaign operatives like Steve Bannon. Talk a little bit about that. And are there other companies working with campaigns closely on data mining?
So Steve Bannon and Robert Mercer, who is a hedge fund billionaire, who is a major funder of Trump's campaign, set up Cambridge Analytica in 2013. And it's worked on a number of American political campaigns, including the Ted Cruz campaign, because Mercer backed Cruz before he switched over to Trump. Mercer himself comes from a computer science background. He actually helped invent algorithmic trading. So he, in particular, is very drawn to the idea of using data mining and analysis to influence voter behavior. And that seems to also accord with Steve Bannon's perspective on winning the culture war. Something that Christopher Wiley said in his conversations is that Bannon in particular was very drawn to the Cambridge Analytica model as a way of trying to influence behavior and understanding in particular the connections between influencing consumer behavior and influencing political behavior, right? So selling someone a brand of shampoo is a lot like selling them a particular political candidate or a particular political cause.
Christopher Wiley, who you just mentioned, the data expert who oversaw Cambridge Analytica's data harvesting program, helped to blow open this story. He spoke with the Guardian in this video published Saturday.
We spent $1 million harvesting tens of millions of Facebook profiles, and those profiles were used as the basis of the algorithms that became the foundation of Cambridge Analytica itself. The company itself was founded on using Facebook data.
How often is this going on? Is this happening with other campaigns too, Emily?
This was a clear violation of what Facebook wants people to be doing with this data, whether that means other people are, you know, adhering to the rules and not doing it, it remains to be seen. I think we can't know, but it was this information, the way that they got it, the way that Chris Wiley got it was, you know, very, very simple. And before Facebook turned off the spigot for third-party applications to get this data from people's friends without their consent, millions of people's information was harvested by third parties to which we do not know their names or how it's used. So though this isn't going on anymore, that information is out there. And I would think it would be safe to assume that people are using it in all sorts of ways that we don't understand.
So for those of us who are not tech savvy, what should we be concerned about, or what should we be doing now to protect ourselves, Ben?
Well, there are a number of things that one can do modifying the privacy settings on Facebook. But ultimately, it's important to keep in mind that a company like Facebook has every incentive to bury those settings, to make them difficult to understand, and it will never give you the option to opt out of its business model. Right? It can only make tweaks around the edges. So I think the most important thing that people who are concerned about this could do is to contact their representatives to actually build some political momentum around this issue, because this ultimately needs to be a regulatory solution.
Right. Yeah. And could I just add, you know, the business model of Facebook, people have known that it was kind of gross in the way that it would target ads to you. And we were grossed out by seeing micro-targeted ads that knew, let's say, that I have a son and that he is going to be 3 soon and we're going to have a birthday party, and all the ads are about that. And people found that disquieting. But I think what may impel people to actually contact the representatives now is realizing that the exact same mechanisms that allow people to serve us those ads are the mechanisms that allowed, you know, Russian propagandists and companies like Cambridge Analytica to actually influence the democratic processes in nations. And those are two very different the stakes are much higher in one of those scenarios, but it's the exact same technology, and the basis of which is Facebook's business model.
Wow. Makes me think a lot differently about the fact that I see dog food ads after posting a picture of my rescue terrier. Michael is calling from Boston. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Kim. This is I just wanted to make two points on this issue. The first point is that I'm not really sure why people are surprised about this story. I think it's pretty naive. So for me, when I like my friend's post about his new pair of jeans, I'm not surprised when I get an ad from Gap asking for my pair of jeans. I think that's how, right? That's how Facebook makes money. Of course they're sharing my data, and Facebook is a public forum just like any other public forum. If I stand in the street with a sign saying my opinion on something, well then of course companies are going to take that information and sell me ads based on that information. And the second point is, you know, I'm not really sure why we're thinking about this as necessarily a bad thing and anti-democratic. So, you know, I like posts all the time, which are, you know, anti-guns and pro-gun regulation. And then during the election, I would get tons of ads pro-Hillary Clinton explaining that she would be strong on gun laws. Like, I found that as informative and helped me make the decision easier. If anything, you know, as long as both sides are taking advantage of this kind of technology, which clearly they are. I mean, Barack Obama is the one that sort of revolutionized this kind of information.
All right.
Well, then this is actually pro-democratic.
Well, Michael, I'm going to pause you right there because joining us now with this conversation from Washington is Congressman Adam Schiff, a Democrat from California. He serves as the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. Congressman Schiff called for Cambridge Analytica to testify before Congress. Congressman Adam Schiff, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Kim. Good to be with you.
So you have invited Christopher Wiley, a whistleblower who revealed the Cambridge Analytica data mining operation. What do you want to know from him?
Well, we'd like to know what his role was, what the role of Cambridge Analytica was in obtaining this private data belonging to tens of millions of Americans. Was Alexander Kogan, who we've also invited to come testify, was he brought on for the purpose of acquiring this data? How much was Facebook aware of? Facebook had embeds, that is, their own people working within Cambridge Analytica. Would it have been apparent to them where the data came from? If the data was used to create look-alike groups on Facebook, would that have been something they could conceal? So we have a lot of questions for him, and we're very grateful for his willingness to testify.
Now, Cambridge Analytica is based in the UK. Has that made reaching out to them difficult, and how responsive have the folks there been to you?
Well, the bigger problem, frankly, we had on our committee was the unwillingness of the majority to invite most of the witnesses from Cambridge Analytica in to testify. We had requested the majority do that even when we had Alexander Nix testify. He acknowledged that he's in the country frequently and was willing to come in person, but the majority scheduled his interview by video teleconference at a time when members were on the Hill voting and the site was off the Hill. So they made it very difficult for us to get the answers, they being the majority. But nonetheless, Mr. Nix didn't make it easier either, and the whistleblower's statements contradict, I think, substantial issues raised by Mr. Nix's testimony. So I think it's important that we subpoena Mr. Nix and bring him before the committee and make sure that we get the truth.
So yesterday, Senator John Kennedy, the Republican from Louisiana, told Bloomberg TV that he thinks that Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg needs to testify before Congress. Let's take a listen.
Well, Mr. Zuckerberg and the other CEOs need to come. We had one hearing. They all sent their lawyers. I don't know what they paid them, but they got their money's worth because their lawyers didn't say a damn thing.
What does that say to you, though?
They dodged and bobbed and weaved, and these issues are not going away.
Zuckerberg and other Facebook executives have been fairly quiet about this controversy so far. Do you agree with the senator?
I do. I think we should have them come and testify. We likewise had the general counsel for the companies come testify before the House Intelligence Committee. I thought that was an interesting choice of witnesses to be sent. It wasn't the CEOs and it wasn't the chief technology or chief security officers. I think through the choice of these representatives, saw this as a legal and compliance issue, rather than providing the more fulsome disclosures to the committee that would be helpful in our investigation. We've learned a lot more about Russian use and abuse of their platform since then. Now with these very serious allegations that their user data was abused, there is all the more reason, I think, to have the very highest levels of the company come testify, and that would mean the CEOs.
Congressman, what is the role of you and your colleagues here? How is it a desire to rein in Facebook or these data mining companies? Do you plan to introduce legislation?
You know, there are a whole number of issues that have come up, and they came up oddly in the context of the Russia investigation. I mean, certainly some of them are very Russia-specific. In the case of Cambridge Analytica, apparently there was a relationship between Cambridge Analytica and Lukoil, the second largest oil company in Russia. The researcher that they employed to get this data also had a position on the faculty at St. Petersburg University or a grant with them. But the much broader issues involve the privacy of Americans, users of Facebook. It involves how the algorithms on these social media platforms divide us by giving us the information we want to see and maybe depriving us of any contrary information. So I think we need to do very broad oversight, not just the Intelligence Committee, but other committees as well should be exploring these issues as they concern privacy and information, and even, you know, what these devices do to young minds that are so addicted to them. And I think the first thing we do before we regulate is make sure we understand the problem and do our oversight.
Congressman Adam Schiff, Democrat from California, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And just moving on to some of the issues that the congressman brought up, this is about this goes very broadly, Ben. This isn't just about regulating companies. This is about how we use data, the privacy of individuals. This could really reach beyond just Facebook, even just beyond just social media.
Absolutely, right? It's much broader than Facebook. It's much broader than Cambridge Analytica. This is about our digital sphere. And our digital sphere is, these days, often where civil society takes place, right? It's where a lot of our political life takes place. So the companies, and there are a few big ones, that own this digital sphere and run it exclusively for profit have enormous power over our lives, our personal lives, our political lives, our civic lives. So we absolutely have to do something to bring that digital sphere back under democratic control.
Troy is calling from Iowa City, Iowa. Hi there, Troy.
Yes, I get a couple of quick comments. I would love for Zuckerman to come because I heard that he was one of the guys that, or his company, limited the post of Republican views. And also, I think Obama in 2012 used that same tactic that you are talking about now. And you guys never said anything about it. Why is that? I don't understand why you're jumping on Trump's problem. Well, he did the exact same thing as Obama. And then you're saying, well, it's okay for Zuckerberg just to limit the post of Republican views.
Well, I want to give Emily a chance to respond to Troy's comment.
So, Troy, I think what you're referring to is something that happened in 2016 or 15, I believe, when Gizmodo published a blockbuster investigation revealing that people on the newsfeed team, they were people who worked on a module called Trending Stories. And that's when you go onto your Facebook and you see on the side that there are some stories trending. There was this report back then that individual human editors of that module were suppressing conservative stories. And this story landed like a bomb inside Facebook. It was, you know, you are rightly outraged. Everyone was outraged by it. And the interesting thing about that story is that Facebook really took it seriously. They did not want to be seen to be having a bias against conservative viewpoints. And they, you know, they actually reacted by meeting with conservatives. They got rid of human moderators for a while on the trending module, and they really tried to overcorrect, I think, because of the bias that, Troy, you're referencing, which is that they didn't want to be seen as preferring Democrats. I will say that that overcorrection in some ways is part of the reason why they perhaps did not responsibly alert users and the public to what was going on with Russian meddling in the election, because they didn't want to be seen again as limiting conservative views.
Yeah, Troy, do you see a difference between those two situations?
Well, I think Facebook actually even sold those ads to the Russians. And I think they went out and looked for that money to put out those views. And I think Mr. Zuckerberg needs to come on and explain, you know, there's two sides of the coin. And I would love for him to point out that his company did not do the due diligence on the Republican side.
Well, Troy, yeah. I mean, Ben, do you think that that's going to be some of the questions that Republican lawmakers may have for Mark Zuckerberg if and when he chooses to go before them?
I'd imagine, because you now have bipartisan calls for Zuckerberg to come and testify. And, you know, what Troy said about the Obama campaign is also true, right? In 2012, the Obama campaign used a third-party app to essentially acquire information about your friends in order to send them targeted advertising if they were in a swing state.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're taking a look at regulating how social media companies handle users' personal information. You can join the conversation. What actions would you like to see Facebook take to protect personal data? How about Congress and the FTC? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm speaking with Ben Tarnoff, columnist at The Guardian, covering technology and politics, and Emily Dreyfus, former writer at Wired, covering technology and national affairs, and she's now doing a fellowship at Harvard. And now also joining me from New York via Skype is Frank Pasquale. He's a professor at the University of Maryland, and he's an expert on the law of algorithms and researches privacy laws and surveillance. And he wrote the book, The Black Box Society, The Secret Algorithms Behind Money and Information. Frank, welcome to On Point.
Oh, thank you, Kim. Great to be here.
Now, tell us, what are your concerns about data mining, the kind of thing that we saw happen at Facebook?
I think that data mining in general has a lot of threats to it. It's not just a matter of seeing ads online. A lot of the data that's out there can be repurposed in many ways to score people, to score their health status, whether they're a criminal risk, whether they're, say, a good employee or a bad one. And so we all have a stake when data, when there's runaway data, and it's not being properly monitored and controlled.
So, Frank, back up for 1 minute. You're talking about scoring people. Who is scoring folks, and in what way can that affect them?
Well, for example, there has been a report saying that there are over 8,000 scores out there that are like credit scores. And so these are like data brokers, other firms. There are 4,000 firms at least that do this type of thing. Cambridge Analytica is only a very small tip of an iceberg of entities that could be using and misusing data.
So what's the solution here? Is it a need for regulation? Are we running at all into free speech or First Amendment issues?
No, I don't think we are. I think, you know, and for this particular issue, fortunately, the Federal Trade Commission actually got a consent decree against Facebook in 2011 that specified certain things they were not supposed to do. They were not supposed to make misrepresentations about privacy or security. They were supposed to obtain affirmative express consent from their users for a lot of data uses. And I think that as we further investigate this, we may see serious fines, finally, for a company that, you know, I think has managed to avoid regulation in for far too long.
So some of our listeners are reacting, really struggling with what they should do and how Facebook affects their lives. Andy on Twitter writes, it definitely feels inescapable. I've been wanting to quit for years because of how invasive it is, but it's also become essential to stay connected with friends and family, especially since moving halfway across the country. Mike wrote on our website, Facebook is not a part of the infrastructure. You can exist on the internet without ever needing Facebook. Frank, what do you think? What do you think people ought to do to be able to stay engaged and use social media for the great tool that it is, but also protect themselves?
Well, I think there are better and worse forms of social media. So, for example, you know, I used to be on Facebook a great deal of time. I still am on it, but say I've moved more to Instagram, you know, or things like that. It's like if you can maybe find forms of social media where maybe there's not so much of a threat potential, where I think we've seen a lot of the threats of Facebook sort of being criticized throughout this hour. But I think ultimately, though, this is a regulatory matter. I've heard, you know, both Emily and Ben talk about the need for regulation. I completely agree, because the problem is that even if you're on Facebook, Facebook may be on you in the sense that they have shadow profiles. So this is a bit like the Equifax situation, right? Mm. Nobody can choose not to have a file with Equifax, so we have to regulate them. And I think the same thing is going on here.
All right. Ada is on the line from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi there, Ada.
Hi, Kim. I just have one quick comment. I like Facebook, but I think we as a society have given up way too much of our personal information. You can be on Facebook, you can connect with friends and family, but it's also our responsibility to decide what we are going to share. I don't know that over-regulation, and I am a liberal, But I don't think that over-regulating something like this is the right move, but that's just my opinion. I think we, as a society, should take responsibility for what we decide to put out there, to share. We are thinking people, and we should use the brain to think and not put our whole lives out there.
Yeah, Ada, thank you for that call. David is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi there, David.
Hi, Kim. So to echo the previous caller, I think that's a bigger conversation that unfortunately no one's having. There's a conversation to be had around regulation, very important, but we should be realistic about our government agencies and what they're able and effective at, especially these days. They're way behind the curve in terms of this, and it's not to say they shouldn't be addressing it, but where is the larger conversation around choice here? The populace has a choice. It's not as though if we stop using Facebook, the air will be sucked out of the room. Food will no longer be available. It feels like there's not a real conversation here around saying, letting the market respond.
Yeah.
The market tells Facebook, I'm no longer going to be at the mercy, or maybe they modify their business model and it becomes a subscription model. But
yeah. Thanks, David. What do you think about that, Emily?
So I think David and Ada both bring up a really good point, which is that you don't want to over-regulate into the ground something that people really value. And I think we're hearing that from a lot of the callers on this show. Facebook really does provide a service to people. I think that what's important to understand is that this. If we were to regulate Facebook, the idea would not be to limit what people could say or limit what Facebook could allow you to do, but rather to actually, I think, enable what both Ada and David were calling for, which is the ability to make an informed decision about how you use Facebook. Right now, and Frank can speak to this, probably much better than I can, but the black box that is Facebook, that is how the algorithm works, that is how its surveillance mechanism works, that is how it sells and brokers its data to other parties, that's something that we currently journalists, regulators, congresspeople do not have access to that information, which means we can't really be making an informed decision about what it means to use or not use Facebook. And that's what the regulation in Europe is trying to allow, is for people to know what's going on so they can then make a choice that is informed.
And Ray, who wrote on our website, Ray from Vermont, had a similar point. He wrote that while Facebook has rules or guidelines as to how data collected from users can be used, is there any evidence that those rules are enforced, and if violations are found, then what recourse does either the company or the affected users have? What about that, Frank?
Ray is exactly right. And what we're finding out is that people within the company who said, watch out, this whistleblower, Perikilis, who you quoted earlier, who said, watch out, this is terrible. We've got to proactively audit developers to see what's going on with their data. It looks like those people were silenced. Mm-hmm. So it looks as though the choice was made within the company to privilege and prioritize massive profits, not just normal profits, but massive profits over the interests of users. And that's, and Emily is exactly right to say that we don't understand the black box. I talked to a Federal Trade Commissioner, one of the top privacy officials in this country, and I said, do you know where these companies get their data from and where the data is going to? And she laughed. She said that is so hard for them to monitor, to get a handle on, that they weren't even trying at that time. Right. They just put out a few reports, et cetera, to get around the edges, but it was so hard for them to monitor this data landscape. So we can take it seriously. We've taken it seriously in healthcare and finance regulation. We've got to bring those models to the internet.
And Ben, now the FTC is stepping in. What can or might they do about this?
Well, as Frank mentioned, Facebook is almost certainly in violation of the 2011 consent decree. And they could pursue pretty substantial fines. The numbers we've been seeing is about 40,000 per violation. So if you do 40,000 times 50 million, I can't do that much math in my head, but it goes up into certainly the millions, potentially the trillions of dollars. I think it remains to be seen in this particular political configuration in Washington whether the political will exist to pursue that kind of action.
All right. Lincoln is calling from Boston. Hi, Lincoln.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling on point.
Zuckerberg was quoted in 2013 as saying that privacy is obsolete. And I really don't understand where everybody in the politically correct world all this time is just not acknowledge that. And, you know, the communists, during the time of communism, they monitored private communications, et cetera, of the citizens, and that's how they controlled, until they failed, communism. And I don't see what the difference is here, other than we're talking about a business. And people need to vote with their wallets, so there's changes. I think that technology is so far ahead of regulation that whether you regulate it or not, it's really going to have any effect.
Thanks, Lincoln. What do you think about that, Emily?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lincoln brings up a really good point, which is that, you know, as Ben mentioned earlier, the entire business model of Facebook is surveillance. And we have known that. And when Zuckerberg said, you know, privacy is obsolete, what he meant was, he was very overt. This is you're giving me this information and I'm going to use it to sell you shoes. And I think that the fact that it was that surveillance funds capitalism is what has made us as a people think it wasn't that big of a deal, because that surveillance was just going to be used to try to make money, sell us things, and hey, that's how society functions. But what this story that we're talking about here with Cambridge Analytica, and Frank used a really great term to talk about it, runaway data, shows that, like, sure, that data was originally maybe gathered for the purposes of furthering capitalism and just to sell us some stuff, but that's not how it was ultimately used by a third party who had no business having it. It was then used to actually sway society and our government. So, you know, I think Lincoln is absolutely right that there we have opted in, maybe you could say, or maybe it was thrust upon us, to a new surveillance reality that surrounds us, that these companies are in charge of. And, you know, we used to only worry about the government surveilling us. And now these companies are really a part of that mechanism in a way that even the government doesn't necessarily understand. And we've got to start doing something about it.
From a listener on Facebook, Scott Nicholson writes, I'm not sure it's social media that fundamentally needs to be, quote, fixed. The bad actors that misuse it and the gullible people that don't think critically before they share are the biggest problems. Ben, what do you think about that?
Well, again, I think I would de-emphasize the personal responsibility angle here. Right, because certainly you can choose what you share on Facebook. You can choose whether or not you have a Facebook account. But as Frank pointed out, Facebook is very good at tracking you even if you don't use Facebook. Right, they have these shadow profiles that they can essentially figure out who you are from your friends. They also track you around the internet by placing pieces of code called pixels or widgets on various websites that actually monitor your activity. So they can know where you've been even if you don't use Facebook.
And deleting your cookies isn't enough.
There are more and more sophisticated ways of identifying users. There's something now called browser fingerprinting. So the sophistication around surveillance continues to grow. And I think it's really critical that people realize that, sure, you can decide not to provide a particular post on Facebook. You can even decide to delete your Facebook account. But at the end of the day, just like Frank was saying, just like with a credit score agency like Equifax, they know about you.
Right. Wow. Joe is calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Kim. I do see these things as an attack on democracy, because what's being done, the fundamental idea of democracy is that all of us put together make better decisions than any group of us separately. And what's being done with all this data is we are being divided into smaller and smaller groups, and more fanatical groups that really aren't using reason a lot of times to make political decisions. And so this is a fundamental problem for our society. We all need to hear each other's positions and the evidence we use to support those positions if all of us together are going to make good democratic decisions.
Well, Joe, thanks for the call. Frank, what do you think about that? Is this an attack on our democracy?
I think that we need to be extremely wary, and there is some good legislation out there now about honest campaign ads, because essentially what's happened is the government has fallen behind. The Federal Election Commission has shirked its duty to really understand who's paying for ads on Facebook, and our first step is we need to be able to understand the full ad landscape instantly. We can't wait for delayed disclosures, et cetera, because as we're seeing from these investigations and as the congressman talked about, there are so many ways in which bad actors can come in and divide societies. It's happened historically around the world. Now it's happening to America. It's being brought home. And we need to be really careful and have as much disclosure as possible about the nature of these political advertisements and interventions on social networks.
Grant is on the line from Boston. Grant, just 20 seconds or so. Go ahead.
Okay, Kim, thanks. Great show. I really think this is the most important topic you could be talking about right now. It's a threat to our democracy. There's really, really, I'm a fairly conservative person, but this really needs regulation from the government to protect all of us and to protect our democratic system. Right now, we're allowing it to tear us apart. Everything is either seen as black and white, and people that want to divide us have easily turned us against each other on a number of issues, not just political. Thank you very much, and I enjoy your show.
All right, Emily, you get the last word on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I fully agree with our caller. And one of the things that makes this so disturbing, I think, and it's important to remember, is when people see information on Facebook presented to them, there is this false feeling of objectivity, that it came from somewhere that was neutral. And that's the part that I think makes us so susceptible to the kind of work that Cambridge Analytica has done. And that's the part that we need to be more aware of and that regulation can help us understand.
Okay. Emily Dreyfus, a Nieman Journalism Fellow and former senior staff writer at Wired, covering technology and national affairs. Thanks for your time, Emily.
Thanks so much, Kim.
Ben Tarnoff, columnist at The Guardian, covering technology and politics. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Frank Pasquale, professor of law at the University of Maryland. Thank you so much for joining us, too.
Thank you, Kim.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, is it time for Nancy Pelosi to pass the baton to a new generation of leaders? Some Democrats are saying yes. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.